The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Can I hear now? Can you hear me now? This is Vina Jones Cox, and you're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing, where this week is every week. We are broadcasting live, not a podcast, ladies and gentlemen, because a podcast, that would have been edited out in post-production. And here we are still on live radio after all these years trying to bring you the information and inspiration you need to start or grow your own real estate investing business. We've got a very special show for you tonight with two different guests from different parts of the country who do slightly different things with the same end in mind. And we're going to what that means, by the way, because we have two different guests on the phones, is that we will not be able to take your questions by phone today. We can take them by email at vinaradio@gmail.com. Or if you absolutely must pull your phone out, we do have a text line at 513-201-8249. 513-201-8249 is our text line. Before we jump into tonight's topic, just a couple of quick announcements about stuff that is going on out in the world. If you're in the greater Cincinnati area or can make yourself be in the greater Cincinnati area tomorrow, it's our annual Get Mentored Networking Night here in Cincinnati, up in Westchester. This is a night that there's no talking from the front of the room. It's just, we've got lots of our experienced members there who are there for the purpose of answering questions in their fields, whether that be rentals or raising money or taxes or asset protection, or, you know, we all need to be mentored about something at some point in time. I went to this same meeting last night in Columbus, and before I sat down at my table, I went and talked to one of the other mentors because I needed to ask a question about a complicated tax thing. So that meeting is open to the public. You can get more information at CincinnatiREIA.com, CincinnatiREIA.com, and just, you know, pre-register because there's dinner at 5 and we got to know how much food to order. CincinnatiREIA.com tonight. Y'all are going to think this is insane, but at the beginning of the year, we spend a lot of time kind of picking up organizational type topics. Like in a week from Saturday, we've got an all-day workshop on how to set up your QuickBooks. And I know all you guys who are like visionary entrepreneurs, no, don't talk to me about bookkeeping and taxes. I want to go take down properties. Are going, oh my God, who would sit through an entire day about how to organize your QuickBooks? Well, people who have realized that disorganized QuickBooks is a nightmare and costs a bunch of money, both in terms of what you have to pay your accountant at the end of the year and also of whether you can run a report that says how much money you made on this particular property. So it's a lot of that stuff at the beginning of the year. Well, tonight, the Tech and Tools Focus Group is about how to organize your files online. And again, you like visionary people are going, oh, who cares? Just throw them in a box and you can find them later. Yeah. Well, so when you write an offer, you know, you write it on your computer and you send it to the seller and the seller requests a change. And so you change it. So now you've got two offers in your computer and then the final one turns out to be different. So then there's three offers in the computer. And then 3 months later, you got to go find the offer and you have to open up three different files to find out. It becomes a big deal, right? And then there's going to be the closing statement for that property and there's going to be the lease for that property. only the geeks are hearing me. You can come to the Tech and Tools focus group tonight if you want to know more about that. It's at cincinnatirea.com. Just click on the calendar for today and you'll see Tech and Tools focus group, and that's what it's about. So with all of that technical organizational stuff out of the way, let's talk about today's topic, which there's a lot of stuff coming back around now that advanced investors, or let me say experienced investors, people who've been in the business for a long time, are going to say, oh, I mean, they're talking about lease options and land contracts. I know about those. Well, you know about those because you were in business back when they were a big deal, because you needed an alternative way of getting rid of a property if you fixed it and tried to sell it and it didn't sell. So you did a rent to own, or you did a contract for deed, right? Or maybe you had a rental that, like, you couldn't quite figure out how to make it cash flow if everything was on you, and so you lease optioned it to somebody who wanted to buy it later, and you let them take care of the maintenance and repairs on it. Like, you know that stuff, but it's new to all the investors who got into the business after 2018 or 2019, and you know, they're saying, I don't know what to do. I can't sell this property for what I have in it. And I'm saying, well, do a rent to own. And they're like, what's that? So we're going to talk about it today. I have not one, but two guests, again, from different parts of the country, who do slightly different strategies on very differently priced houses. And they are both joining me by phone. I have Hannah Flegel, who is from Marin County, which is just north of San Francisco, so Northern California area, who really, really, really likes to do rent-to-own deals. Hannah, are you with us? Hannah?
Hello.
Ah, there she is. Yeah, we're trying to. I'm simultaneously introducing you guys and making sure you're potted up and that I can hear you in my headphones. So there's a lot. You can't see all the buttons being pushed in here, but there's a lot of them. My other guest is familiar already to many real life real estate listeners. It's Sam Worf, who lives in rural Tennessee. Very different market in terms of prices than Hannah has. And really enjoys doing repair for equity deals, mostly through what we call contracts for deed. Sam, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Ah, woohoo, we got everybody. Excellent. So I'm really glad to have both of you folks. Thought about doing two different shows, but then I thought, no, I think it would actually be better if we could kind of compare and contrast, because people get these two things mixed up. They sort of sound like the same type of deal from a high level, but they're really not. So, Hannah, I'd like to start with you and have you explain the rent-to-own strategy that you use as if I were smart, but I had never done one.
Okay. So, typically, with a rent-to-own strategy, the investor is going to be offering a temporary lease with the option for the family to purchase the property at a later date. So there's usually a option fee, which is provided by the family to the owner, the investor, at the time that they move in, and then they have a rental contract for a specific time frame. And then at the end of that time frame, usually it's 24 to 36 months, then the family has the opportunity to purchase the property. So during the rental time frame, the family living in the property is going to pay more money each month, with a portion of the rent being applied towards the purchase credit.
Okay. So to put that in Midwestern numbers, that last thing you said, the rent might be the standard rent on the house might be $1,800 a month.
Correct.
But you might be in the lease option in the rent to own deal charging $2,000 a month, but part of that $2,000 gets applied toward the purchase price when and if the family buys it.
That's correct. So typically What I like to do is even set the monthly payment a little bit higher than the $2,000 in that example. I would probably go $2,200 a month, and I would apply a large chunk of that towards purchase credit so that when the family does end up buying in the future, their housing expense will actually go down because that's an additional incentive for them. Mm-hmm. Because they'll get the depreciation on the property through ownership. So I try to provide an incentive for them to purchase it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're not just looking for somebody who's going to rent it for a few years and go, now I changed my mind. I'm going to go buy some other house.
Correct. I want a family that recognizes this opportunity. They are... there's either some reason that they can't purchase it now. Maybe they have a little bit of debt or they have a credit implication. And we can work with them during the rental time frame to put them up in a position where they can buy it. They'll be successful with it. It's a payment they can afford in a house that they like. And they're, working very hard to secure their financial future.
Okay. So, Sam, same question to you, because you're not using the same documents that Hannah's using. You're not using the lease and the option to buy to do your deals. You're using what in this part of the country we call a land contract, and most of the rest of the country they would call it a contract for deed. So explain your strategy to me like I'm smart, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, so... And I want to clarify this in the beginning. Some states you don't want to do land contracts because of some of the laws, but a land contract or a contract for deed is where it's basically an installment sale. So you draw up a contract that has a price, an interest rate, and then the individual that's renting it or buying it, they make the payment. They take care of all the maintenance. As far as any of that goes, in the contract, it states that they have to take care of that. And if they don't, it gives you the opportunity to take the property back. It is a longer term cash flow for me. It can be a 20 or a 30 year setup for them to buy, giving us long term cash flow instead of chunks of cash that you get with the lease and the option. So I like it better because I like the long-term cash flows.
So, Sam, in some sense, you're kind of being the bank for these buyers. Where, Hannah, in your position is, no, I'm a landlord. I'm a rental housing provider. I'm just giving you this bonus of an opportunity to, in the future, if you get your act together, if you do what you need to do, if you work on your credit or whatever needs to be worked on, you get to buy the house you've been renting.
That's correct.
Okay. So hopefully, audience, you are clear now on which of these things which person does and kind of the basics of how they work. If you have specific questions, you need to email them to us at vinoradio@gmail.com, vinoradio@gmail.com, or today you can text at 513-201-8249. We will be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Vina Jones Cox. I have not one, but two very experienced investors from completely opposite ends of the country to this evening, talking about two strategies that sound really similar, but work in slightly different ways and are things that we all need to re-educate ourselves about in the current market. So I'm going to ask both of you guys, and we'll start with Hannah. Would you agree that the market as it is right now is going to be a really good time to be exercising your strategy, and why?
I think it's an excellent time to to use both of these strategies, frankly. With the quantity of short sales that are going to be coming on the market in the next several months, just for one example, these people have a ownership mindset, and they need a cheaper housing expense. And if we can help structure them getting out of a over-indebted property and getting them into a better priced home for themselves using rent-to-own, I think that would be wonderful.
And those people are not immediately going to be able to buy another house if they are, you know, I'm 8 months behind in my payments. I've gotten my house sold, so I didn't go through foreclosure, but I have, I've reduced my credit score by quite a bit by making eight payments, but Hannah will let me live in a house for 36 months before I have to requalify. And after 36 months, if I kept my nose clean, I can get an FHA loan.
That's right. That's exactly right. And by having a variety of mortgage brokers at my disposal, I can introduce them to a VA lender, FHA lender, local credit union, and, really set them up. And I get to control the timeline. I mean, the short sale implication on their credit would, also provide some kind of timeline. But if I was, I could work within that, and that gives me time to identify another property so I can rinse and repeat and keep doing this this business. So, yes.
Mm-hmm. Sam, same question for you. I know you've done the same thing. It doesn't matter what market it is, hot, cold, you don't care. But in terms of what the market is, what's happening in the market right now, why is it important for people to understand land contract, owner financing, repair for equity type deals?
All of this is going to hit very hard because, just what Hannah said, some of these people have ownership mindsets, and they're going to want that option. And I don't want to repeat what she said, but we are going to be their solution. They don't want to go live in an apartment, and they can't go to the bank and get traditional financing. So we have the opportunity to structure deals that work for them. This land contract, that's a long-term play, and that appeals to a lot of people when the laws are applicable to make it work out right. So both of these things are very valuable. And I know Hannah's fixing to do a big presentation, and I definitely looking forward to that. So I want to.
She is. Yeah. Two weeks from tomorrow at Rhea's national meeting that we do every month online, Hannah is going to have the whole hour and a half all to herself to present, exactly how she lines this up, finds her people, screens her people, all that sort of stuff. So thank you for mentioning that, because folks could register for that now at CincinnatiRhea.com. Going to start with Sam this time. Tell us what your ideal property looks like for your particular strategy. Like, what's the size? What's the condition? What's the price range? Tell us what Sam sees as, hey, this is my repair for equity deal right here.
So what I'm looking for is a median priced house, with a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, that needs some work but is very livable with all the functions. The HVAC works, all the electrical's upgraded. It's safe and sound, but it needs a good faced lift, make the bathroom brought up. That in our area, that's going to be $100,000 to $50,000 property as it sets, that we'll be able to acquire with proper financing and everything, so that we can be the middleman, the bank in the middle, and put these individuals in there.
I feel like $100,000 to $150,000 is a down payment on the house. Hannah probably feels like.
I doubt it could cover the payment.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Hannah, what does your ideal property look like?
Well, the 3-bedroom, 2-bath are the most popular. So, where those are ideal, actually, I try to get a 3-bedroom, 1-bath. I can get a lot better purchase price on those. sometimes a two-bedroom, one-bath, and they're in pristine condition. I mean, they're not super fancy. I don't put all the bells and whistles and a steam shower in there or anything, but it's clean. It's, you know, new electrical, flooring, paint, just it's pretty dialed in. It's a nice quality home. And then that's the type of property that I usually go after.
Mm-hmm. Middle price range, middle of the road price range.
Yeah. In my market, anywhere between, if I can pick those up between 350 and 600 is usually the price, my target price range.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting because I just heard the two of you say two very different things. I'm just making sure the listeners caught that. Sam is selling houses that actually do need some work. Like they're not pristine. Now, they're livable. Like, the furnace is going to work and the roof's going to keep the water out and the, you know, water heater heats the water and all that sort of stuff. But if it needs a bathroom facelift, that's on the buyer. And therefore, Sam, I suspect that you are selling for less than full value to these folks.
We are. We're allowing them to do the repairs so that if they do want to go to the bank and buy us out, they have the equity to do that without coming out of pocket.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Hannah, you're doing the opposite. You're making the house like you don't need to do anything here. It's like it's
that's right.
It's already done. So I'm guessing you're getting top dollar or even more than top dollar by the time, you know, like today's top dollar is one thing, but I don't even have to buy it for 3 years, so maybe you're charging a little more.
Correct. Yes, that's how we structure it.
Okay. So that's two different customers, you know, like that's two different, like I need to know who your ideal applicant is. So Hannah, I love the idea of your house. How do you know that I am the right person to move in?
Yeah, it's a good question. One of the techniques that I use is typically I'll have an open house and I'll market it for first-time home buyers, rent to own, and that usually brings out a large quantity of people. I don't do a lot of open houses, but when I do, it is pretty amazing the quantity of people that come through. And I will get everyone's name and phone number and email, and I will provide a home buying seminar for them. And I'll get a mortgage broker to teach the class with me. And if they show up for that class, I know they're pretty serious about buying a home.
That's like a hurdle for them to jump. Come to this class. Okay.
Exactly. So, and they'll stay to the end and ask questions, and I can tell from, you know, looking in their eyes and shaking their hands if they're really serious and they recognize the opportunity that I'm extending.
Mm-hmm.
So that is probably the first hurdle that I have them jump over to work with me.
Okay. So seriousness, how much money do I need to make? How bad can my credit be?
Well, that's going to be on an individual thing because a lot of people earn a lot of money, but they just spend a lot of money.
Mm.
And sometimes I do need to look at their credit. I do need to see what their debt looks like. And sometimes it's really just a matter of shuffling billing dates around. A lot of times all their bills are due on the first of the month. So they have a lot of late payments throughout the month, but it didn't affect their credit. It's just, you know, $80 in banking fees from late charges. So when I sit down with them and say, why don't you take all of these bills and put them on the second half of the month? And they say, well, I didn't know I could do that. And so once they start saving $80 a month, which is about $1,000 a year, they start to get some financial acumen and they get motivated. So it's a process of, you know, getting them on a debt repayment plan. And then once all the debt's settled, then we work on the credit. Meanwhile, they're saving money. They're making better financial choices. And, you know, I'm giving them this runway, but they're doing their part, I'm doing my part, and then together we are able to, you know, bring them through our program and into homeownership.
Wow, you put a lot of things out in front of what most people would have said to that question, which they would say, yeah, you got to make three times the monthly payment. You're putting a whole bunch of stuff, seriousness,
and I'm
willing to kind of do credit counseling, and I like you've flipped the script on what most people would have said on that.
Yeah, I guess since I usually have more than one property, I need to see what they can afford, mm-hmm. and so that was a long way of saying three times one third their salary, but. Yes, I do a very calculated measurement of what they can afford, and I say, I know you want this three-bedroom, two-bath, but you can't afford that, but I do have a two-bedroom, one-bath that you can't afford. Do you want to talk about the two-bedroom?
Yeah, but
if they say... Mm-hmm.
I feel like if I came to you and I you know, cleanly made three times the monthly payment, but I couldn't convince you that I was really going to buy the house, you still wouldn't let me have it.
Well, I might. For you, I would.
You got everybody in the studio laughing, Hannah.
Oh, good. Good.
So, Sam, who's your ideal client? Who's the person who comes to you over and over and likes your deals and wants them? And you like them?
I love what Hannah's doing, educating the people and making them self-eliminate a lot. That's great. For us, with our properties, we basically qualify them just like we would a rental. So they fill out a rental application, they go through the whole process. And our typical client for these land contracts or rent to owns are working class, usually the blue collar, you know, stepping up, because we're not selling the top end house, we're selling the starter to mid range home.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking for people that are younger, young couples who's got one or two children that are trying to move up out of an apartment or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Now, and it sounds like they need to have some willingness to get up to their elbows in drywall mud, too.
Yeah, and we do sort of make sure if the house needs a lot of work, like if we're going to tear a bathroom out or something, we want to know that they have the skill sets to make that happen, or they have somebody that is willing to help them do that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a real repair for equity where there's a lot of work to be done, they're going to have to be in the trades to probably qualify to get in those.
Okay, great. We're going to take another quick break, and then, boy, our text line is just loading up with questions right now. So if you have a question for Hannah or Sam, 513-201-8249 is the text line. Alternatively, you can send it to vinoradio@gmail.com, and we will be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Conversing today with Hannah Flegel and Sam Worf. Both of these guys, by the way, if you're like, man, I need to meet no more people like Hannah and Sam, they are both going to be at the Creative Finance Summit on May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in Atlanta. And in, when is Fund Drive? A month from today, we are going to have a special offer for Real Life Real Estate listeners to get tickets to that and support public radio at the same time. And that's going to be like a one-day kind of offer, so y'all are going to want to be listening. If you are on my email list, you'll get an email telling you how to grab one of those packages early. So if you're not on my email list, maybe you should go to realliferealestate.com and fill out the little form that says, want more, Vina? So let us go, Bob, to the questions by text.
Oh.
And listen, fellows and gals who are texting, you're literally texting a computer screen. So if you don't say who you are, we're just going to say, here's a text from a 614 area code. So like text your, be polite, say, hey, this is Fred, and my question is this. So go ahead.
Well, the first one we'll take here is a Denver, Colorado area code. And its question is, curious about the, quote, being the bank, unquote, issue. Are they not being the bank that one? I'm sorry. Are they not being the bank, one with the rental and one with the lease?
Okay, so I'm just going to say Hannah is not being the bank. Hannah is renting a house. There is a second contract along with the lease, which is an option to buy, but an option to buy is not a financing instrument. An option to buy is, hey, if you do what you need to do within the time frame where you need to do it, you may buy this house for this price that we've agreed upon. It is not, and if you don't do that, that's the end of our relationship. The lease expired, the option expired. Maybe I let you keep living in the house. Maybe I renew your option. But once it's expired, you know, it's not a long-term relationship. Sam is the one that I said was kind of being the bank. So Sam, that's not a 100% accurate description. So in what way are you being the bank?
I'm giving them long-term all the way to the end type setup. So once they get in with me, they're not having to go. There's no arms. There's nothing like that. You know, it would be just like them getting a 30-year mortgage at the bank. They're just paying me for 30 years and taking care of the property.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that time, they get the deed. Where at the bank, they get the deed up front and they give a security instrument to the bank in case they don't pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the way in which land contracts are different than owner-held mortgages. And you could actually do the same deal with an owner-held mortgage. In a lot of states, the land contract is the better instrument for the simple reason that in Ohio, you can default somebody out of a land contract in a few months. And it takes like many, many months to foreclose on a mortgage. And a lot of these folks are putting down pretty minimal money. So if they default after 3 months and you have to spend $5,000 or $10,000 foreclosing, that just becomes like you don't want to do those deals. Because I got $995 up front. Now I've got to spend $5,000 foreclosing. That math doesn't math.
You got to know your local laws. You got to know your laws and how to work them.
Yeah, yeah, you really do. So next question.
Okay, we jump to a southwestern Connecticut area code. And I'm going to have to paraphrase this one because it's kind of lumped together in two parts. Well, it's all the same question. How has rent-to-own or repair for equity changed in the past 20 years? Mm-hmm. I did at least one of these circa 2004.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you guys practically or legally, have they changed a lot in 20 years?
Legally, I have to record them now because especially with owner occupied, because they're classified under consumer protection, where 15 years ago I didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course Dodd-Frank has come along in the last 20 years as well, and the whole process of how you're qualifying people and what records you are keeping about how you qualified them has changed a lot. So like if you're going to do more than three of the SAM deals in a rolling calendar year, you have really got to read up on Dodd-Frank, because there's some serious requirements there. Hannah, legally or practically, have you seen big changes in your rent-to-own strategy?
Well, I'm in California, so we always have a lot of new rules. Yes, I have, because prior to Dodd-Frank, when we would do the rent-to-own program, we would put a second lien on the property when we'd sell it. We would sell it, and we would take our profits in a second position lien.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was one strategy we used. And then after Dodd-Frank, we were not able to sell or carry as often as we did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I had to add the financial education to the families, to the tenant buyers, so that I could pretty them up and get them to a banker so that they could get, you know, institutional financing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it forced me to get more involved. I had to, like, handhold a little bit.
Yeah, and I think all of us can just say without hesitation that if you're going to do either one of these things, you need to know what your local and state laws are around them.
Absolutely.
Because the way land contracts are handled contractually in Ohio, I know, is different than Tennessee. And, you know, a lot of people aren't aware that, like, the city of Cincinnati has a specific law about lease options that doesn't exist anywhere else in the country. So, like, you can't just go out and do these things going, well, I guess if there was a law, somebody would have told me. No, you gotta know. You gotta go talk to people who do this and, understand what you're getting into. So what is our next question, Bob?
Okay. Our next question comes from Hey, Los Angeles, California area code says, regarding rent to own, if customer is unable to buy after 36 months, what happens to the spread they paid, rent versus overage or extra amount?
Okay, so that's a Hannah question, because there's two amounts that they paid that they would not have necessarily paid just to rent the property. One is the upfront option fee, and the other one is that spread between the market rent and the rent that you were charging so that you could give them credit. So what happens to that if they don't buy the house?
Yeah, it's happened a few times. I had one tenant buyer who her only issue was her credit. She had less than perfect credit. So I worked with her. We wrote letters to the credit bureaus. We got her credit all in order. And she actually ended up buying a different property. And I thought she'd ask me for the option consideration money and the credit, monthly rent credit. And she said, no, you helped me so much. You keep it, you know. So that happened one time. Another time I had a tenant buyer leave the area. And he said, could I just get the option payment down? You can keep everything else. It helped me move. So I gave that back to him. Technically, my paperwork is pretty good, so I didn't have to return any. But I work with people on an individual, you know, case by case. But honestly, I've done 42 rent-to-own. I put 42 families in rent-to-own, and I think maybe four didn't buy.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all of those.
That's a very good record. So just to be clear, question asker, she doesn't have to return any of it. And the reason, if you're going, oh my God, that's not fair. Okay. But remember, those people tied up her property for 2 to 3 years. She was not able to sell that property to anyone else and not able to sell it at any other price other than the one that she had already agreed to. So if you're going, oh, it's not fair that they would have $10,000 extra in that, well, they understood it going in. That's what the paperwork said. And that was the cost that they paid for tying up Hannah's property for 2 to 3 years and, you know, basically capturing her ability to sell it to anybody else or at any different price. We need to take one more quick break. When we come back, we will get to our questions via email. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. Having what I think, if I do say so myself, is a really enlightening conversation about these strategies that they kind of straddle the line between, I have a house for sale and you must go qualify to buy it right this second, and no, I'm just going to rent it. Like, it's kind of, they're both kind of in between that, where I'm going to get monthly payments for a while, and I am, in fact, going to sell the house, I hope. And if y'all don't understand, we talk a lot about what the benefits of the buyers are, that, you know, the buyers get these chances to buy houses they wouldn't otherwise be able to buy. But hope you understand what the benefit to you as an investor is, not just in terms of overall profit, but in terms of, this is another way of thinking about, I have this rehab that won't sell, So what do I do? Do I just sell it for less money and lose money? No, you can rent to own it, or you can sell it on a, if you can get the right underlying financing, you'd sell it on a land contract. I have this rental that it's gotten impossible for me to even break even because my taxes and insurance have gone up so much. Okay, well, so sell it, repair for equity, or sell it on a lease option and let the tenant take over the maintenance part. And in the case of the land contract, also the taxes and insurance part. So, like, this is just another tool for your tool bag, everybody. Apparently, we have one more text question before we get back to the emails.
Yes, Vina, and this one, listen to you. This is from Todd in Northern Georgia. What processes are they using to get applications approved? Are they hiring mortgage loan originators to do the pre-approval or on for the loan, or do they need to qualify for it?
Okay, so this is a Dodd-Frank question, and it's actually one of the questions in the email was exactly the same. Everybody is hearing you guys say owner financing, sell with owner financing, and what they want to know is, are you going through the Dodd-Frank process with the licensed mortgage originator or not? And we're going to start with Sam on this one.
Yeah, we pre-qualify them through the rental application to make sure they meet the minimums, and then before we actually get to the final, we do go through an RMLO, which is a licensed mortgage originator, which does the underwriting and gives us a letter that they qualified that goes in the file. And so we want that third-party documentation.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sam, here's, that's another way things have changed in the last 20 years, because if you tried to get an RMLO to do that 10 years ago, if they said yes, they would have wanted $5,000 for that.
Or 1% of the sale price.
Uh-huh. So that that opportunity opened in the market that investors needed RMLOs who could do that job for some amount of money that was less than the down payment we were getting, and those people have appeared in the world, right?
Yes, they have.
Okay. So, Hannah, what about you? Do you feel like you even need to do that?
Well, what we do is I also approve the rental the method. I run my tenant buyers through a rental application process as well. And then what I've learned to do over time is to bring a mortgage broker in early. And quite often, they actually qualify for a loan right then and there. And if that happens, then I turn them over to a preferred realtor, and usually they go and buy something. They don't need my program. But for those who don't qualify, then they're good candidates for a rent to own. And my mortgage broker kind of guides me and says, look, if they pay down this car loan, if they pay off these two credit cards, then they will qualify in, you know, 8 or 15 months or something. Mm-hmm. So then that's a good candidate for me. And then that's the one that I will work with.
Mm-hmm. And you don't need to go through the Dodd-Frank, the whole thing, because you are not providing owner financing.
In most cases, I am not providing owner financing. I do, on occasion, provide owner financing. And if that is the case, then they do go through underwriting. Okay. And I have sold, you know, private financing before. I've seller carried several times. But I do comply with all rules and restrictions.
Okay. All right, last question. This is from Derek in Columbus, and I need you guys to, like, give your best 30-second answer on this. He says, your strategies aren't common to most people. Where and how do you find the people to rent or sell to?
Go ahead, Sam.
For us, it's just the same marketing we do for our rentals. And then we go from there.
Okay, so you, Google, Facebook, Zillow, where do you look?
Most of ours is Facebook. That's where we get kind of all.
Okay, so, okay. So same exact places that you would find any renter.
Word of mouth and Facebook is our big ones.
Okay. How about you, Hannah?
Yeah, word of mouth is a big one. I use Zillow, and I advertise it as a rental or rent to own. and I get a lot of phone calls off the rent to own.
And Eric, I'll add that, you know, I've done both of these kinds of strategies many times, and one of my very best ways of finding potential buyers for those repair for equity deals is bandit signs, man. Like, I'll hang 20 bandit signs within a mile around the property, and it just says 3-bedroom, 2-bath, owner will finance, you know, $700 a month, whatever the payment is, and a phone number, and the phone just rings off the hook until I can get the signs down. I actually have to go take the signs down because usually within a week I've got, you know, 20 people that say they want it and one person who takes it. So don't overlook bandit signs. All right, Sam, Hannah, thank you so much for just sharing as openly as you did today. I'm hoping that a lot of people are going, okay, now I need to know more about this. And if you are thinking you need to know more about this, again, Hannah is doing an entire rent-to-own presentation at the Cincinnati REIA National Online Chapter Meeting 2 weeks from tomorrow. So that you don't forget to register, you could just go right now to CincinnatiREIA.com, click on the calendar for 2 weeks from now, and get signed up for that, and you'll get your Zoom link for it. So I appreciate you guys. I'm looking forward to seeing you in person at Creative Finance Summit.
Great. Me too. Thank you so much. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. We'll be back next week with more information to put you on the path to financial independence through real estate investing. Until then, happy investing.